City Video, this is Russ.
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast, and in another in our increasingly common things where Zach and I just talk about stuff and no one particular movie, today we're going to be talking about the concept of the anti-hero.
Yes.
Now, this is one of those weird things that if you talk to 12 different people, they'll all have 12 different definitions for exactly what an anti-hero is. So there's essentially a couple of things we want to talk about briefly. Like, one is the actual meaning of the concept. Yes. And then probably the thing we'll end up talking about more is the kind of culturally accepted meaning of the concept, because those are two kind of different things.
Yeah.
I mean, the traditional, well, there's actually Webster. A traditional meaning.
Well, Webster calls an anti-hero a protagonist or notable figure who is conspicuously lacking in heroic qualities.
Yes. And by heroic qualities, it's usually it's courage or empathy or any of the things that you think of. Like, you know, there's like a continuum of kind of idealism and cynicism. And on one end, when you have the really idealistic characters, it's like the Jesus and the Captain America and all that. And then like way down the other end is where you get, you know, Rorschach from Watchmen and John Wick and characters like that. But I think one of the things that is really interesting about this, and part of the reason I want to talk about this is because I spoke with Chuck Palahniuk, who is the writer of Fight Club, and he's got a new he's got a novella coming out that's got essentially coloring book pages in it from comic book artists.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we talked about was this idea of kind of the anti-hero as, you know, because the characters that Palahniuk writes tend to exist in the kind of weird gray space between being an anti-hero and being an outright villain.
Yeah.
And to me, it's interesting, especially because each time you get a major cultural phenomenon like Fight Club, it can help to redefine these terms, and it can help to move the bar, and it can help to do all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So when you have something like Palahniuk's new work, he is actually, for the most part, kind of writing characters who are defined by characters that he already wrote. And yeah, I mean, like, you saw this
almost like any, and it's kind of weird too, because he kind of lives in its own world. It's not like, you know, Hemingway or something like that, where kind of you feel like his earlier characters might be defined because his reach is so big. But Palahniuk, it's like in this little tiny world that Palahniuk, you know, runs through, that they end up defining themselves. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is you get writers like Alan Moore, who did again Watchmen, and he wrote a book in Watchmen that is explicitly, or at least more explicitly, a rejection or at least a questioning of these ideals than I think most books are, which I think falls into the same category as Fight Club, in my opinion. Like, I don't think anybody who is reading Fight Club reasonably or watching that film reasonably can say with a straight face that there's a real question as to whether or not we're supposed to think Tyler is like a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it even brings up, you know, the questions at least with Fight Club. Is there a hero at all? I mean, like, is there even an anti-hero? Is there, because, I mean, at least with the, at least kind of what we think of it with an anti-hero, it's, you know, John McClane, it's, you know, somebody, a flawed hero. They're still a hero. Like, they're going out of their way. But I mean, like, really? I mean, I guess, you know.
Well, what's interesting is that
spoilers, no matter what, on Fight Club.
I mean, I think what's interesting is that when I was doing a little bit of research into this, the classical definition of an anti-hero it's the same kind of book definition, but culturally it was looked at differently. Like antiheroes prior to, you know, say the 50s were more in the vein of like Willy Loman. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the narrator from Fight Club definitely falls into that archetype mm-hmm. more than he does into, you know, the John McClane or John Wick archetype.
Yeah. I mean, John Wick upon itself is, you know, he's not saving, you know, there's no, it's literally just revenge, which I guess I'm sure that, you know, people will, you know, throw that in there. Like, I think that, and obviously this is, you know, part of the, I think the original reason why we're going to talk about this is that mm-hmm. the term is like so many terms, you know, so many tropes overused massively, you know, and like, I don't, you know, there's a lot of, characters as of late, you know, and I say as of late, like in the last, I don't know, 8-10 years of film, not like really that lately, but that now every single character, pretty much every single hero is an anti-hero of some level, like unless it's literally The Rock. Like I'm trying to think of like what characters, I mean, like Schwarzenegger's roles for the last at least like 15 years have been anti-heroes to some level, you know, like all the kind of normal, you know, guys have now become like the guys that used to be pure superheroes or pure heroes are now anti-heroes and they have like some flawed level to them.
Yeah. You know? I feel like there's some weird kind of metatext to when you see Tom Cruise in the latest Mission Impossible movies or when you see Tom Cruise in Jack Reacher movies where he's clearly a damaged individual.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise used to be the archetype for a straightforward hero in Hollywood. And one of the ways that you could kind of demarcate that is the fact that when you thought of Tom Cruise, you thought of that giant kind of glowing smile.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the last time I remember, like when I saw the trailer for the second Jack Reacher film, there was like a bit in it where somebody was threatening him or something. And he gave like the Jack Reacher smile, which is totally not the Tom Cruise smile because it's a, I'm only smiling because fuck you.
Yeah. No, that's,
and
yeah. That's, I mean, like, again, I mean, like, which I think, I mean, like, that's actually the reason those are kind of the only Tom Cruise films I truly enjoy. Like I must've seen Jack Reacher, the first one, at least because the second one is nowhere near as good. But because they added a child, because they have to, because it's a sequel and it's mandatory. You have to add a child in a sequel. For the first one, I'm actually convinced. Can we think of a sequel? I guess there's a child in the Matrix 2, isn't there? Like literally, it's I don't know. I'm just making.
I mean, there's children all over the Matrix world they have
no, but the sidekick. Joking. It's like there's a sidekick, and then it's because there has to be somebody who, you know, is smart alecking and
Short Round
decided that we can't. Yeah, exactly. I mean, even though Short Round I actually thoroughly enjoy because Short Round is very different because he's vastly more competent than Indiana Jones is for the most part. And the only reason he needs to be saved is because he physically is, you know, tinier than the large guys that like grab him or something like that. You know, I mean, it has nothing to do with like, you know, him being incompetent, like with the Jack Reacher, his, you know, maybe baby, which, if you've seen the film, it's funny, but, because it's half of it's is trying to figure out whether it's his kid or something like that. But, you know, it's just literally him basically saving her from doing after she does some stupid shit because she's a street smart kid and knows anyway, that's aside.
An archetype we can talk about another episode.
But I mean, like, it made me think immediately, like Live, Die, Repeat was ultimately fantastic film. Sadly didn't do anything at the box office anywhere near that. But perplexingly didn't do anything at the box office, which because it literally has almost everything other than I think everybody thought that it was a video game movie and then maybe stayed away from it, even though it's a video game movie, but in the most possible way that you could be a video game movie and the fact that you live, die, and repeat.
I think that one of the interesting things is when you look at the kind of weird evolution that we've had in this trope in the last, you know, 20 years, even let's say, you look at, and timing wise this is a bad example, but like somebody like Lester from American Beauty.
Yeah.
where that was an anti-hero.
This, by the way, is filmed October 30th at 10:52 Eastern Time. So think about Kevin Spacey and what we know so far about him. Using being a closeted gay person as an excuse to jump on top of a 14-year-old. But yes.
Which actually remarkably tracks with American Beauty, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yes, yeah.
But I mean, subtracting that context from the thing, like, that is a character who has shaped, I think, in a profound way, the way people want to see anti-heroes on film in the last 20 years, because this is a character who, on a very small level, I think most people wouldn't think to apply the anti-hero label to him, but it definitely fits as far as I'm concerned. And one of the things that is part and parcel of his appeal is the, like, fuck you nature of it. And that's one of the things that's not inherent to the idea of an anti-hero, but it's become inherent to the idea of an anti-hero to the extent that there are very, very few movies I can think of in the recent past where you have a protagonist who would qualify as an anti-hero, and he's not, like, deeply antisocial or has, like, that, damaged in some profound way.
Yeah, damaged, PTSD. Like, let's see, damaged, PTSD, antisocial, kind of has some, you know, mental disorder or something like that, whatever, you know. You think even the accountant, you know, autism. Yeah. So we decided that now that's a it's kind of a weird superhero trend. Like, he's able to shoot a rifle from a mile away, and that has probably something to do with his autism. I'm not quite sure why, but it's part of his...
Maybe pattern recognition in math? I don't know.
Yeah. So, I'm okay with that. Actually, the more... That's one of those films, the more I watch, the more I enjoy it, which is super weird.
Yeah.
But, and again, this is Monday night as of 10:55, and Ben Affleck, because he has had his own things, which... Anyway. But is there
a conversation we should have as a whole podcast one of these days, but I kind of want to get Ava in on it because I kind of want it to not be just white dudes.
Although it literally could just be like us going, is there, who's left?
Yeah.
Like, who isn't terrible?
Kevin Smith is getting accolades. So
yes. Yeah. I see, like, I think the only people that are left are going to be, like, people like Kevin Smith, maybe, like, a Seth Rogen or something. Like, just people who are, like, too awkward to actually sexually harass someone. Like, not actually has nothing to do with them being a good person. It's just, like, I don't see Kevin Smith, like, especially, like, early days, you know.
Yeah.
Beyond being, like, I think he's just too terrified of his wife to actually do anything like that at this point. And not that he, again, I don't believe that he actually would. Yeah. But.
I don't, and it's one of those. I think it's a fair characterization to say that he's a dude who, A, wouldn't be predisposed to that kind of behavior, but B, by the time he had the power and the clout in Hollywood to quote unquote get away with it, he had already married somebody who, to his own acknowledgement, is like marrying way up over his station, and he's pretty much happy staying there.
Yeah.
So, but in any event, I'm always struck by these because I feel like every few years we have the sea change of who's the next guy. And I guess right now, maybe it's, maybe it's John Wick. One of the interesting things is that we've lost any kind of counterpoint to, or we had for several years lost any kind of counterpoint to the antihero. And again, like speaking to the DC movies. Both of us enjoy the DC movies, but both of us have said lots of good things about Snyder's Superman, but it is kind of impossible to ignore the fact that in this continuum of idealism and cynicism and the hero and the anti-hero, there are a lot of anti-hero traits to Zack Snyder's Superman.
Yeah.
I
think it was just part of the reason why, like, I know you are like, I'm a Batman person, you're Superman. Superman guy. Like, to generalize massively.
Yeah.
And, but like that's actually one of the reasons why, like, I'm like, finally, Superman. I'm not a huge fan of the actor who plays Superman, but this is a Superman that I actually enjoy the mm-hmm. first time probably ever. And like including a lot of the comics too. Like there's, I'm trying to think of, you know, at least what I've read, I was a lot more limited when it comes to that. But like Batman, I've always basically loved because even, you know, outside of, you know, the 60s slapstick Batman, you know, basically he's always been, you know, he is the essential kind of anti-hero. Literally when you go to mm-hmm. TVtropes.org, he is the image attached to it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But I do think it's interesting to see the pendulum swing in the other direction at the moment. Really, at this point, it's just Wonder Woman, but Wonder Woman made, you know, $400 million more than anybody expected it to. Yeah. And I think it's interesting because Wonder Woman came out so closely juxtaposed with not only Batman, Superman, but also Deadpool and Logan. And we had gotten really to this point of, you know, Deadpool is an amoral sociopath who just happens to be fighting a worse amoral sociopath. Yeah. And
the heart of gold. That's always kind of, and he's funny. I mean, he is kind of, I think he is peak, like Deadpool is peak anti-hero. You literally, it's really, really difficult to go anywhere past that other than just being a straight up bad guy who,
right.
you know, joins forces with the good guy to beat somebody else. Like Deadpool is essentially this Deadpool, at least, is a good guy. He's just a bastard, you know, like, I mean, which is kind of the, you know, which is, there's so many, you know, so many, that's like a really, really big one. It's like, well, he's really a big guy, but he's kind of like, you know, the, like Logan.
Yeah.
Is that guy. Well, he has the heart of gold, really, when it comes, literally it comes to the moment where he has to have the heart of gold and he will have the heart of gold. You know, he's like, God damn it, okay, I'll be a good person for this moment. But I'll do it very begrudgingly. And I'll do it like usually.
Which is, I feel like it's one of those weird things that I wonder how much of that is the, like, Joseph Campbell formula filtered through some, like, cynical film school kid who doesn't really get it. Yeah. And that bit in the hero's journey where he's supposed to be reluctant comes out as this kind of self-serving, ostensibly loner, like pseudo philosophy.
Yeah. Han Solo on steroids, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
I mean, I guess. I mean, that's kind of it. Is that, like, I think that, you know, when it comes to comic book movies, especially, is that Han Solo has kind of defined. I mean, obviously, that not to say that there's not. I mean, there's literally Clint Eastwood, like, made it. Obviously, there was characters before, but kind of within the modern film era.
I think, blockbuster era.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's that. I mean, John, you know, there's a little bit of John Wayne there. I mean, John Wayne was occasionally, you know, like a bastard, and then was like, okay, I'll go and do the good things. But that wasn't his role. That wasn't him.
Yeah.
He was the basically that era's, like, generic. He's basically that area's. Here is the Rock.
Yeah. Well, even the man with no name wasn't. Yeah.
What's that?
I was gonna say even the man with no name wasn't.
Yeah.
All that much of a reluctant hero for the most part. I mean, we think of him as being kind of an anti-hero, but that's mostly just because he killed a bunch of people. I feel like it wasn't like a lot of the traits that you associate with an anti-hero aren't really present in Eastwood until, like, the Unforgiven era, or at least post Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly there's elements of it there, but I think that he very, like, he did that turn of the, like, oh, I guess I'll do it. I guess I'll be the good guy.
Yeah.
Incredibly quickly in the early days. And it wasn't until later in his career that it became more of a protracted, like, this is a chunk of the plot.
Yeah. And I'm curious though. I wonder, especially since most of it was a spaghetti Western, style, is that I'm curious with that on how much of that was, there's not a lot of writing in those films, like literally just not a lot of actual dialogue, like writing. So I'm curious on whether they did the kind of, well, I'm not quite sure if I want to do it and move on. Like, okay, I'll do it. Because literally how do you do that without him just going, no, and sitting there in a chair,
yeah,
like just doing it, like, because I'm like, how would Sergio Leone kind of back and forth, like, well, I'm, you know, I don't know if we should, or, you know, it's
yeah,
you know, we're gonna risk the village if we go after these people and attack them, you know, ahead of time, yeah, whatever, you know, any of the scenarios in those films where it's like,
yeah,
no, you just have to have him kind of go, no, I don't want to. Oh crap! That girl that I saw in a bar. I'm literally making this up. I don't think there's a,
yeah,
like a girl I saw in the bar that, you know, was vaguely nice to me.
Yeah,
just got kidnapped, and okay, now I'll go shoot everybody.
Yeah. but I do think it's interesting to see the. I'm thinking about it. There wasn't, outside of Joe Johnston's Captain America movie. It's been a while since I saw like a straightforward, aw shucks, Christopher Reeve style, like hero in these movies, because, and I'm not just talking about superheroes, although they tend to provide the most obvious kind of examples of these things.
Yeah.
But I really feel like we've become a culture that is so obsessed with the anti-hero and who's so obsessed with the morally gray that,
yeah,
I can't think of the last time outside of like kids movies and Captain America 1, not even 2 or 3, because by 2 or 3 it gets all political and espionage-y.
Yeah.
That we saw a, like, a traditional hero in the mold of, like, what we saw with Wonder Woman.
Yeah. In a very different way. I literally just did blockbuster films of 2000s and trying to, like, look through, and, you know, I mean, obviously Iron Man, I mean...
It's interesting. Spider-Man fits into that category in some ways. I mean, I think that he was intentionally supposed to subvert it when he was created, because obviously he doesn't stop the mugger and he tries to make money off his powers and all these things you wouldn't normally associate. But at the same time, context of modern film and in the context of kind of this continuum I was talking about of idealism versus cynicism, Spider-Man definitely falls down on the like Superman, Captain America idealistic side.
Yeah.
I do think there's an interesting conversation to be had, though, about how the mood and the lighting and the cinematography of the film color your perception of those things. Because I wouldn't have thought of the Amazing Spider-Man movies because they're lit like a Punisher movie. And to me, and the action is so much more fast. Maybe that's part of it, too, is that action has become so much more fast-paced and violence has become so much more realistic that something like Spider-Man, there's a brutality to the action scenes that didn't exist when you and I were kids and stuntmen were like a third as good as they are now.
Also you had to have stuntmen. You didn't have, you know, even in a lower budget film, you can have a decent, as long as you, and also editing abilities and styles have changed massively. But I mean, like, you don't need to have Jackie Chan literally falling, you know, like going into a wall. You can have a CG thing and a quick edit so that you don't notice the CG, and the entire wall is Superman, or as Superman throws somebody through it or whatever. You know, you used to have to actually have physical bricks lying around, and now it's just, you know, a green screen that somebody, you know, is thrown towards or something.
I will say too, that adds to the conversation I was just having about lighting and set design and all that kind of stuff, because as we were talking about the other day, one of the ways that people hide bad CG or cheap CG is with darkness, because it's easier to kind of color things darker and watch them blend into the shadows. So it's entirely like
why Blade Runner? You had the money. You had so much money, and I get that it was supposed to be kind of dark and, you know, whatever. It's a post-apocalyptic, post-something world. I feel like there's so many posts in Blade Runner 2049. but I don't get why. I don't get why they hit it on there. But that's that's beside the point.
I don't really know that we have a thesis as far, like, I don't think there's anything inherently bad about the model of the antihero, even in the kind of weirdly dark version that we see dominating the media now. If anything, I would say that the big problem I have with it is simply the fact that it has dominated the media with no real pushback for a decade.
Yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, even I'm trying to think of any, like, San Andreas, like, I just think of The Rock just because he's like,
right, yeah,
in real life, he's a good hearted nature and everybody completely loves him.
He's got the early Tom Cruise thing I was talking about where you never see him not like grinning ear to ear.
Yeah. But I mean, but you know, even that film, which I enjoyed in that kind of terrible blockbuster, mm-hmm. you know, like this film is going to be a blockbuster and literally nothing else sort of film. And, script is 12 pages and that's all we care about. Even that, I think he has like, he's divorced and there's some, mm-hmm. there's some like kind of background that he was kind of a crappy, husband / father and kind of making up for it, but not too much, but there's at least there. And then, you know, I mean, there is the Fast and Furious entire series where, you know, again, he's the pure good guy in that film. I mean, at least for a while, because he's the cop, he's the by the books cop, but you know, but Vin Diesel, you know, gets him to break the rules to, you know, win the day. But even that, obviously, you know, I mean, he's kind of the exception within that film. He still, you know, still relatively stays good, even when he does break the rules. But like that entire film is filled with, you know, they're literally, they become heroes. You know, I mean, it's basically the A-Team over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. What are we on, 12 now, I think? Which, again, I'm perfectly fine with. I'm the type of person that actually usually sees that in theaters opening night. but like there isn't, God, is, again, other than kids film, I mean, it's kind of amazing. I mean, I guess that, I mean, what's in, what I think, what will be interesting to see law in the arc is, mm-hmm. will we have it turn back? Will we have Christopher Reeve, you know, on the other hand, can you now? Like, can you have, with the audiences that go see films, can you have a Christopher Reeve hero at all? And have it make more than $12 at the box office, because it's really difficult to write a good
film. I think you're going to see more attempts at that in the next couple of years than you've seen in a long time because of Wonder Woman. Because Wonder Woman felt so much like that archetype. Yeah. I mean, can't even really make all that many. I can't think of a credible argument you can make to kind of attach the anti-hero label to her. I'm sure somebody could try to make the argument because she killed people in the war, but that's.
I mean, that literally, she's killing. I mean, as so many very angry. So many very angry Nazis claimed they turned the World War, they turned Germans into Germans in World War One, basically into Nazis. And you're like, well, mm-hmm. I mean, if you read World War One history, they weren't Nazis, but they were really terrible human beings. Not that the British were any better, not that they actually portrayed the British to be any better in this film either, or the American, you know, the Allies. But I mean, I think that, again, though, the only way I'm curious on how that would work
for a character who isn't the babe in the woods.
Yeah, exactly. Or just, you know, or a known superhero entity. Like, how do you make the $500 million film that has even a Tom Cruise playing the, I don't know, innocent army soldier who's going to win the day among, and you have to, because you also have to surround her in the worst of everything. You have to surround her with anti-heroes and villains and everything so that she stands out as a pure innocent hero. And again, she literally is like the virginal, you know, I mean, that's in this, especially even in this version, you know, exactly what you say, Doe in the Woods. She has to be, they have to be like that to work it out. And again, I just don't know how, I mean, I guess I'm sure that there's a film out there to be made, And here's a challenge to everybody. Like, write the script that's watchable and interesting, dialogue wise, that's, you know, that's a hero film, not necessarily a superhero film, because I mean, I think superhero films you can make that film. You know, again, Captain America, you know, I mean, you can make even a more pure film where he doesn't have to, you know, I mean, it's already been done, the first one.
I mean, I'm very interested to see what happens as a result of Wonder Woman, because I do feel like having a movie that made that much money inherently means it's going to have imitators. And I don't know that – I can't think of anybody in Hollywood right now who I think would do a really good job being an imitator of that movie. Million directors who you're just like, yeah, that person do a really good job making the next like BVS or the next Suicide Squad or the next whatever. And this is an exercise that we've been going through every couple of months as a new one of these movies comes, you know, goes into development. But in a world where we're making not one but two movies where the lead protagonist is the Joker, how do we make other characters besides, I mean, Wonder Woman now is a gimme. Like, she's established. You could just kind of go with it. Superman, I think, is going to drift back that way when he comes back from the dead, because I feel like that's the natural, obvious place for them to go.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you know, when you look at what's kind of coming down the pike, I mean, I guess there's Jumanji, which is literally a bunch of kids in grown-up bodies, and so you've got things like that, and again, that plays to the kind of the Babe in the Woods archetype of somebody who's basically inherently good because they don't know any better and they're just...
But I mean, even like even them, it's just going to be at least based on the trailer and really not much else and kind of who's in the film, like, it's just going to be a lot of crude humor. It's going to be like, you know, Seth Rogen's films in Jumanji.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, there's not even a heck of a lot of actors out there that are playing that. I don't know. I mean, I guess anybody can play any role, like they're actors. So they, you know, you can be surprised that they can play a role, but it'll surprise me. Cause I mean, I still think that, even with Wonder Woman, making so much money, I don't know if I see anyone looking at that, and hopefully at least, you know, being trying to at least be vaguely intelligent about it,
looking
at it and go, no, Wonder Woman not only came out, like, it was one of those films, like, it was a great film, I think if it came out in a different year, it would not have done anywhere near as much money. Like, I think it came out within the right time within DC's universe, with you know, with the right time where even the Marvel universe is going and kind of everything, you know,
I think it came out at the right time because Trump. Like, I think that, I mean, without any, like, I think that one of the reasons that you see things heading in like an anti-hero direction for such an extended period of time is that it was a reaction to kind of a culture that was fetishizing the notion of hope under Obama. And so people trying to not seem overtly political were kind of rejecting that message in favor of something that was a little bit more, like less earnest. And I feel like the earnestness and the optimism of Wonder Woman, coupled obviously with a feminist message, it couldn't have been anything but helped by the cynicism and dishonesty of Trump and the fact that everybody is angry all the time. And now you have a hero who is, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and also, I mean, it was the, you know, on the kind of the social justice warrior side of it, it was the perfect, you know, other than, I mean, literally the only thing it had going against it was that you know, Gal Gadot supports, you know, obviously supports Israel. She's a former IDF soldier. So, I mean, like, literally, even within the lefty world, like, where I see people, you know, continually any goddamn film or product or human or whatever comic that comes out and be like, well, I'll never buy it because it says this or whatever. Like nothing.
Yeah, there was some, there was a modicum of discussion about the fact that Wonder Woman / Themyscira as a whole was not queer enough, or at least overtly queer enough. So that was a discussion.
There's also it weirdly didn't get the any of the issue that you had two black people, like in the whole fucking film, and one of them was a nanny, and the other one was like in the background there, and I think she had one scene.
Weirdly, the weirdest thing about her is that she is a major, major character that, that might have helped to offset a little bit with the comic book people, at least because, Artemis was Wonder Woman.
For a lot of that, it's usually not the comic book people that have that issue. Absolutely. It's people who are completely don't know the world and don't know the universe. But like, this is one time where I'm like, I remember seeing the film and I'm like, oh, that's probably going to be an issue. And then it never was. And I was like, what?
Like, yeah, I think
everybody shut up. Like there's a forum somewhere that I missed. Like everybody shut up about this film. We're gonna make a big blockbuster. Just literally being, you shut up about your damn racial issues. Like we're winning this one, okay, for fuck's sake.
I think there was an element of that. Like all joking aside, I think there was definitely an element of like
#TeamWonderWoman. I mean, it was like it literally was that. I mean, within the lefty world, like just seeing my personal thread of like activists and feminists is that it was like, we can't talk bad about this film. Like the few people that I saw was like, it was good, but like, it wasn't that good, guys, was like, boom, like the hammer went down on them. Like, because I mean, personally, that was my view of the film was like, it was good, but it wasn't as good as most of the other films. Like it had a lot of fucking issues and not even talking about the, you know, the weird, like why did she have to have a boyfriend? Like, why did she like the literally like, okay, so we literally could remove this character from, I know it's part of it, like, but like we could remove Chris Pine from this film and, or give it to somebody, like give it like a much smaller role in this whole thing. And like the only reason she becomes like her full self is because she sees him die. Like, I mean, there's just like, why did we have to have these things? But anyway, that's so far off topic that, not that we ever go off topic.
No, never. But, So this is a trend and interesting to watch. And for me as a comic book person, I've been, you know, watching it essentially my whole life because since Watchmen, the comics industry has been getting kind of darker and grittier all the time. And right around the same time that Wonder Woman hit in the movie theaters and they started to reverse that course, shortly before that came Rebirth and DC seemed to be reversing that course on the comic book side too. Has worked for them so far. However, that is, as you kind of pointed out, comics are inherently, there's a lot more black and white morality. There's a built-in fan base. There's character archetypes that people have already embraced. There are all these things. It will be interesting to see whether, if anybody takes away this lesson from Wonder Woman and says, like, this is something we need to do, whether they can successfully do it.
I think it's by far easier to do in comics, not only because of all these things, but like, but also I think in general, you have better writers than you've ever had in the history of comics. I mean, there's like, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny because I mean, you know, obviously we're working on that project about like all the important people in comics. And then we talk about, you know, it's like,
yeah,
there's like five, there's like, I mean, there's like a lot of writers, but I mean, like there's five guys that you really think of for really top-notch writing, like not comic book Stan Lee's who created thing, but like guys who actually wrote, you know, excellent stories. And then like in the last like 5 years, you're like, damn, there's like Pulitzer Prize, if it wasn't in comic book form, and it was in book form, you would potentially have Pulitzer Prize winning authors and these things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you still have that, you know, I don't know if you have that in film as much, because inherently for the anti, I mean, they're good. I mean, like, amazing. I mean, it's not saying that it hasn't definitely gotten a lot better, but like, you can't do a small storyline. Like, there's no reason you can't, but like, because, I mean, I guess they're doing it with the Joker, you know, I mean, they're doing it, you know, doing smaller films with major characters, not doing smaller films with smaller characters. But you can't take those risks of trying something smaller. Like, it would be interesting to do a side jaunt story with Superman, you know, and just have it be a $75 million picture or something like, I don't know what, what the budget that's small now is, probably like, a $200 million small budget picture, you know, just of Superman doing his laundry and saving some kid or something.
I think Deadpool was like 50. So
yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, Deadpool's Deadpool and but to have like, you know, to have Superman, Batman, you know, even Cap again, you know, even go back to Captain America. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I know they won't for what, two or three more films or whatever it is now. It's weird to think though that, you know, some of the, like, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is an interesting look on that because they're potentially, like, we were talking about with Clint Eastwood where it was like, well, I don't know if I really want to do it. Okay, let's go do it. Like, that was kind of that. That was kind of the Guardians of the Galaxy films. Like, they were all extraordinary anti-heroes in the way that, like, they wanted money for or whatever. But it literally was like, no, guys, we got to go save the universe. Like, and literally that's the opening of the sequel is that, like, we're going to make even more money this time. It's not because of the money, because there's never any money offered. Yeah. It's literally they just go right into it. So it's interesting to think that, like, the inherent, like, anti-hero heroes, like, group team, you know, more than anyone else, you know, more than the Avengers are all kind of, there's a little bit of anti-hero edge to them, but like, they're pure fucking heroes. Like, the worst problem is what Tony drinks, you know? I mean, like, what those guys are like, literally, like, you know, literally, well, now they literally are Disney characters. But like, they're Disney characters. I mean, like, there's no flaw. There's no really flaw issues. I mean, obviously they're arguing now, but like, that's, we all know that when the, you know, going gets tough, they'll get together and join forces. There's no doubt. There's no whatever. It's literally just kind of like, oh, now you're just watching inside baseball on, you know, a bunch of, you know, like the behind the scenes of Jesus being like, well, I really don't want to walk on water. I don't want to get my sandals wet. Okay, I'll go.
Well, I mean, that's like, actually, literally that's it. Here's the thing though. Like that's like going to that archetype. That's literally like, you know, the Garden of Gethsemane. I don't think there's anything that says being a traditional hero precludes you from having like reluctance or doubts. I just think that it's, I think and the Guardians is a good way to kind of put a button on this, but with the Guardians, to my interpretation, I think they're building an arc for these characters where they start out as true anti-heroes and they end up by the end of the third movie as true heroes. And I think that what you saw in that second movie and the thing you're kind of pointing out is the moment where they've made that transition, but they are unwilling to admit to themselves that they've changed. And I think that it'll also be a lot easier to take them
for the entire industry. Literally we've made a thing where everyone's an anti-hero. And so we know that if we see the main character doing something, we know that eventually he'll save the day. Like it doesn't matter anymore. Like, we know that, you know, even though, you know, Tony and Cap are not getting along, we know that they'll work together right at the last second. And maybe they'll fight right afterwards and they'll hate each other right afterwards. Yeah. But we know they'll get together. You know, I mean,
Well, they literally, that was the end of Civil War was like, I hate you, you're a fascist. I hate you, you're a criminal. Okay, well, here's my phone number in case you ever need anything.
Yeah, I know. But it's like, so it's just, you know, it's kind of, does it now become, which is like, will that hurry it along, a potential change in the fact that now we all know, like, oh, come on, it's the main character is Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Wink. Like, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, that's, you know, it's very much the Jack Reacher you know, thing where it's like, oh, he's very reluctant. He literally like threatens, he literally like goes away, goes and hitchhikes in the first one. He literally is hitchhiking out of town. And he's like, God damn it. It just like kind of goes back because he knows he's the only guy that'll do it. And, you know, and
right.
I mean, the other thing too, is that, you know, I mean, within like Jack Reacher and a lot of these films is it I think it's there, that character is he's not necessarily potentially going to lose a lot, or he doesn't have anything to lose. Like with Jack Reacher, literally, like, I think like he knows, he's like, well, if I get shot in the back of the head, then who cares? I don't even have a physical address, you know, like, yeah. So there's no loss, and he knows that he's the only person who can do it, and he knows that the likely he's so good, you know, that he won't lose on this. And there's that, I have a feeling like that's a lot of the kind of the characters now that are, you know, quote unquote anti-heroes. It's not like even like John McClane back in the day where you're like, no, there's a very good likelihood. I mean, obviously we know that John McClane, Bruce Willis is not going to get thrown out of a window and die because that was
there's a different film. But there is a difference between having plot armor because you're the main character because you're Bruce Willis versus in story acknowledging that, like, well, it's not like anybody can take me.
Fuck you, I'm Batman.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, let's wrap up for the evening, mostly because my computer is at 9%. But thank you all for listening. Like, share, and subscribe. You can follow us on Twitter at ECV_podcast. Go to Facebook, Emerald City, or Facebook.com/Emerald City Video. And yeah. All those kind of good places. You can find us on Instagram, Patreon, at Emerald City Video as well.
And before you end, I think we have to subtitle this this video, wherein Zach compares Tony Stark to Jesus.
I agree. Also, I think we should probably, for anybody who's listening to the podcast instead of watching this video that I've made private, and so nobody's watching it right now, I'm Russ Burlingame, and with me today is Zach Roberts.
Yes, that it is.
All right.
I assume at this point, anyone who's listening to Emerald City Video knows who the two voices are.
Yeah, I would assume probably, because we are in like 80% of all the episodes, but nevertheless. All right. I'll see you soon, sir.
Have a good night.